This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. Is that the right music?
No, it's supposed to be applause.
Oh, okay, the applause.
Starting out great.
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Damn it. There we go. And as you can tell, the man that usually controls the sound effects, Agent 70, is not here tonight. He had some things he had to take care of, so if he happens to be able to make it on, he'll jump on, but if not, we'll carry on in his stead. And like I said, I'm Tim D-O-double-G, joined by @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Hey, guys. No applause. I get... Cha-ching? What is this?
Doesn't he do the cha-ching?
No, only when you plug your website.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But when you introduce somebody, you give them applause.
Gotcha.
Worthless.
I'm applauding myself.
Great.
Also, make sure to go check out his website, popculturenetwork.com.
There you go. Now you're getting it.
Yeah. And also, we have @RoddyCat on Twitter with us.
Boo! Oh, me. Hey, everybody.
And also, make sure to check out his news Twitter account, @NewsNerdsNeed.
Do it.
Make sure to check out the website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account @TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation and make sure to join the Google group. Subscribe on YouTube to youtube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just check out theclicknation.com. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite networking sites. And I think that's it. My mind wants to go blank now since I have to do two things at once.
Mm-hmm. A little too difficult, huh?
Yeah. I'm getting it, though. And also, let's see. Yeah. I looked at the image of the cricket and it just like distracted me. I think that's about usually all we plug. So with that, we're gonna get going to the news of the week. Provided mostly by our friend here, Roddy Cat.
My pleasure.
Many thanks.
Not a problem.
My Falcons are putting an ass whooping on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 27-0 so far. Thursday Night Football.
If this is about 10 years ago, I would have said boo.
Alrighty, so we got Thanos versus Hulk coming from Marvel and Jim Starlin. So Jim Starlin's been doing a lot of Thanos-centric work for Marvel with, I think it was Thanos Imperative and... or I think that was the name of it. And there's another
he do that? The guy there's a guy down here or something. I think that was his.
Yeah. So they're trying to put a lot of content out there since he's big in the movies.
Well, one would say that Thanos is Stalin's wheelhouse.
Yes. And we also had the 2014 December solicits were announced this week. So you can go to your favorite comic book news site and check all those out. Joshua Hale Fyakov announced Punks, the card game, coming with Punks, the comic number one. Marvel and Netflix's Daredevil finds its stick. Let's see who that was. So was Stick... I'm not as familiar with Daredevil as...
Stick is basically Daredevil's mentor.
Is he the one wasn't he like the blind janitor?
Correct. Yeah. Or, yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah, he was blind. Yeah, I can't remember if he was a janitor or not, but yeah.
Is he the one that taught him how to fight?
Right.
Okay. So, The Bourne Ultimatum, Silence of the Lambs, and The Hunt for Red October actor Scott Glenn has been cast as Stick, Matt Murdock's mentor in the martial arts, and the upcoming Daredevil television collaboration between Marvel and Netflix.
The gritty version, supposedly, as they keep saying.
Amanda Pays to reply as 1990 Flash role on CW's The Flash. Okay. Captain Marvel.
She was also in Max Headroom.
Yep, that's right.
Let me see what this person looks like. Also, Captain Marvel celebrates a 100th issue in December. So I'm sure that'll be a double-sized issue with lots of guest artists. Actually, the December solicits, I guess, named some of the artists that'll be on board for that.
Of this Captain Marvel or just
No, just
Captain
in general. Marvel. Just in general, because I think that's like this plus her book from...
Miss Marvel?
Yeah, I think this, the last version, and Miss Marvel, I believe.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, yeah, it says 50 issues of Miss Marvel that started in 2006, 17 issues of Captain Marvel from last time, and then these. And there's a, David Lopez is doing a cover. There's a pretty sweet throwback, callback to
Miss Marvel. I've actually kind of been enjoying Captain Marvel since the relaunch.
It's been pretty good.
Hasn't been bad. Let's see. Edwin Jarvis cast in Marvel's Agent Carter. Of course, this is Edwin Jarvis, the actual person, and not the AI that Tony Stark uses in the cinematic universe. James Darcy from Let's Be Cops and Cloud Atlas has landed the role of Edwin Jarvis, Howard Stark's butler, and an unexpected ally to Peggy Carter on Marvel's Agent Carter, due on ABC this winter. Marvel.com reports that Darcy Jarvis, originally the Stark family butler in the comics, but turned into an AI program, Jarvis, voiced by Paul Bettany, when paired with Tony Stark in the MCU, will help Peggy navigate her way through what may be her most dangerous mission yet.
So, probably her she'll be... she'll be his Alfred, but that's not... I mean, he'll be her Alfred, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. Her acquaintance.
Sure.
Associate. Other A words. Sandman's Lucifer to get his own TV show from Fox. But this I don't
know. Well, getting a pilot, right? It's not confirmed yet as a series.
I guess it would depend on which site you go to, probably. This is from MultiversityComics.com. According to a report from Deadline, in addition to the myriad of other comic book-based television programming you're about to see, blah, 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 Sandman's Lucifer will get his own program care of Tom Capinos of Californication to air on Fox. With a pilot commitment in place, the blurb used to describe the series is interesting. Lucifer has a big... Yeah. And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Walker and Evelyn... Evelyn announced as creative team on Dynamite Shaft.
Yeah. Which we had heard about this book from like months ago.
Yeah.
They had never, I don't think they had ever said anything about, I guess just saying, hey, we're about to, actually about to do something, so.
Or maybe they just announced their creative team on it.
Correct.
They're going to show the Wayne murder scene before the Gotham premiere.
Yeah, actually, it's a website you can go to, and I guess it's kind of one of those, you know, you can pan around and check the scene out. Then you click through stuff, I guess. Which, by the way, Gotham starts Monday.
Yeah, I gotta set the DVR for that.
Yeah, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. still starts back Tuesday, so this is going to be a fun week next week.
Yeah, actually, I forgot to mention during the plugging, the Cold Slither Podcasting Network, which we are a part of, there might be some things in the works as far as covering all these comic book TV shows that will be on TV this year, so stay tuned for that.
Great.
Sony's TV Powers, the first photo of Charlto Copley and Susan Hayward's Christian and Dina. So.
Yeah, so basically they just, you know, showed the first pictures. There was a lot of news to come out that I don't think was said before. Like, we knew it was starting in December, and we knew it was for PlayStation Plus people PlayStation Plus people were going to be able to see the whole series for free, but everybody gets to see the first show. Was that it? And they just said, hey, who's in it and who's producing it. That was pretty much the takeaway.
Okay. Arrow adds Captain Boomerang to its Rogue Gallery. I had to keep checking this link because I was like, that's got to be a typo, right?
No, I thought about that too, because I was like, wait, why are they doing it? But we know why they're doing it, because it was like, well, if they put it in an Arrow who's already in there, then there's less to do when Flash comes out.
Yeah.
Which I said on Twitter, it was like, that's kind of presumptuous, even though people who are going to be watching Arrow is probably going to be watching Flash. It's a pretty relatively safe assumption, but not one that you should probably already make.
Yeah. I guess they maybe want to debut him on the more established show.
Yeah. Well, it keeps him from having to do it on Flash, which will just be getting his legs. So
Marvel's Doctor Strange sets release date will shoot in the UK next year. So it's '26 to Nima and DC team for Justice League Gods and Monsters Chronicles animated miniseries to launch before the straight to DVD release of the same name, the animated adventure.
Right.
And being done by Bruce Timm, if I'm not mistaken. So, kind of interesting. More publishers join No DRM movement at Comixology.
I didn't check and see if it was in.
Eric sent that email to me also.
Oh, okay.
So, and of course, the DRM is. Someone explained the DRM. It's like I know what it is, but I don't know how to explain it.
It's DRM is the digital rights management. Mm-hmm. Basically, what it means is when you buy a comic on Comixology, you can read it through the Comixology application, which is their website or the app for your iPhone or Android device. If it's DRM-free, like Image and I think Dynamite Now and whoever those companies are, mm-hmm. you can actually go to the website after you buy the comic and you can download a CBZ or PDF of the comic, which is yours to do with as you see fit.
Right.
So you can download it, save it to your hard drive. If you want to send it to a buddy so he can read it, you can do that. They ask that you don't, you know, like, hey, make your buddy pay for it. But there's nothing to stop you from just downloading it and doing whatever you want with it.
Or backing it up, just for having backup sakes, you know.
Yeah. Although there are ways that you can back up the ones that they tell you you can't.
Right.
But we won't talk about that here.
Okay. Okay, that's the same thing I said. Andy Tong teases the Zodiac Legacy from Disney and Stan Lee. Not sure what that is.
It's, well, it's some project that I guess, because I feel like I've seen this, a little bit of this before, and the premise is relatively interesting. It's steeped in the Chinese Zodiac, which means there's like, you know, I was about to say, have you seen Jackie Chan Adventures? But that's probably not even nowhere near close.
I mean, I have seen it, so.
Yeah. Let's just say there may be some slight similarities with the outside of the Jackie Chan and maybe, you know, whatever else. So that's reductive. So it seemed like it's something that might be pretty cool, though.
November is Rocket Raccoon and Groot Variant Month. And Deadpool movie officially announced for 2016. And the Fantastic Four movie is rescheduled.
We're finished with Fantastic Four.
I'm about to read you what it says now. Because it's actually some just reshuffling of stuff. Because also in this article it talks about the Assassin's Creed movie being put on hold for now, which has people worried that it may not even happen.
I was already there on that one.
So yeah, Fox have decided to finally go ahead and make a Deadpool feature film, sliding it into the schedule for February 12th, 2016. That release date would mean, I'd imagine, that the film would go into production in early 2015. Meanwhile, Assassin's Creed has been bumped off its date and left blown in the breeze. That now, empty 2015 will now go to Fantastic Four, moving back from June 19th. Don't read anything about the F4 movie in this decision. The simplest interpretation is that Fox see the August date as the best one on offer, and while they've got two to choose from now, they're pumped for the later one.
That's kind of like the only one, because August is usually, well, it used to be a bad time. Start to be in a bad time for summer movies. I mean, Guardians kind of game and maybe changed that a little bit.
But yeah, I was gonna say, I think Guardians changed that now.
Yeah.
Just like with Cap. Didn't Cap 2 come out at a different time than people would have originally guessed?
No, I think it was, wasn't it either earlier than, because it either came out in May?
Okay, yeah.
I'd say that was like April or.
Yeah, it came out, that's what it is, came out earlier than people would have normally have thought. So, like, that set, like, a new precedent, and now, I guess, having stuff later.
Yeah.
No precedent. But that's our comic book news for the week. I should probably play a tune. Yeah.
Huh.
Let's get ready for the comic book reviews of the week. I will start first with the Avengers 35. Which I reviewed on popculturenetwork.com and theclicknation.com. So this is, of course, the 8 months in the future time runs out beginning that works its way back. Actually, I guess it doesn't work back. It jumps forward, and then it's gonna, I guess, assume it's going to go back to count back up to the end. I think that's how it goes. Either way, this is a glimpse of the future where we see Hickman, Mumbo Jumbo, but done at least in an exciting way where we get teases of stuff to come.
In an exciting way.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, all the Hickman and Mumbo Jumbo is seeding and planting, you know, seeds for stuff to come. So that's always like the boring stuff. But now we're actually getting into some action. So we have lots of plots here. We have Sunspot and Smasher and Cannonball and Manifold off in space in one location. Basically, I guess it's wherever with the Shi'ar. I guess that's not a spoiler saying that. With the new development between Smasher and Cannonball.
Yeah, that's probably an inevitable one.
I have a question about that, but I don't want to say too much to spoil.
Okay.
Maybe I'll ask you about it off the show. So we had that. We had we got to see It's Not Nilo and Abyss again, who we haven't seen in a while. trying to stop stars exploding, I think. Then we had Star Brand and Night Mask taking on some foes from the Infinity event. And a new occurrence taking place with Night Mask. We saw Hyperion, who I still don't like, in Savage Land with his kids. We have Rough and Tough, you know, we have Mountain Man Hyperion, because he's got a beard now. Mm-hmm. So him and Thor doing their bromance. And then the climax was involved Amadeus Cho breaking into the Avengers Tower to steal some information, and who takes off after him in pursuit, and sort of reveal at the end. So I want to applaud the artwork by, we had Paco Medina, Nick Bradshaw, who actually I think that was his best work I've seen, because I've never really been the biggest fan of his. Dustin Weaver and Jim Chung. So I enjoyed it. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I deducted a point. I would have gave it a 5 out of 5, but I deducted a point for something that I can't remember now. It'll come to me later.
I don't know. My problem was, I'm not a regular Avengers reader. You know, I've been reading New Avengers regularly, but not Avengers. So I sat down with this, and there was a lot of this I just didn't, like, it didn't mean anything to me. You know, a lot of the stuff, and a lot of the characters, I wasn't really clear on what was going on, what the deal was. Like, what's with this baby? I don't know. And these ex-Neely guys, like, I remember them being in the first couple issues of Avengers when it relaunched or whatever, but I haven't read anything since then, and it didn't do anything to really kind of explain them or give them any sort of context. You know, I felt this was supposed to be, you know, a jump-on point for new readers, but it didn't really go out of its way to explain much or to give you the background you really needed to understand a lot of the stuff that was going on. You just kind of, you know, kind of roll with it. The one thing I did like was AIM becoming a benevolent organization now. Just all you have to do is get different management in charge, and the people are actually pretty nice, and they're just smart guys that want to work on technology. I thought that was an interesting
That's a trope that happens. And we'll see again.
It makes me actually interested in AIM, because I've always said on the show many times, I don't care about AIM no matter how much Marvel tries to prop them up and give them bigger status.
Interesting.
And I did remember what I did the point for. So that nice cover that Dirt is displaying right now for us. How many people? Mm-hmm. How many of those people actually appeared in the book?
Hey, look.
Two.
Sometimes covers have to be changed. This covers have to be changed. Sometimes they have to just bring it to the table. You know.
Let's not
look at this.
Technically, three of those people appeared. One actually spoke, and the other two were shown in a different way.
I think it's interesting that here's Falcon as Captain America right here on the cover before that's actually happened in his book.
Well, same with Superior Iron Man.
Well, I would say same with Havoc, except for you see him in another book, except for not necessarily like that.
That's actually Superior Iron Man.
What?
This over here. That's Iron Man.
Well, damn.
Don't worry. The very first time I saw that image, I thought it was Havoc 2.
But Thor appears just like this in the book. You know, you see him just like this in the book. Steve Rogers has appeared this way in his book and in She-Hulk. Mm-hmm. Hulk, of course. I mean, he's Hulk. But and you see Tony Stark in here. Mm-hmm. So, but here's Falcon as Captain America, mostly in silhouette. You can't really make it out, but that's him in the Captain America suit. He's got the shield, you know. There's the spot right there for the star and everything, but yet that hasn't happened yet.
in the future.
I guess.
Yeah. So you were saying that this book was a jumping on point, and I didn't get that. Now, granted, I'm just skimming it, and not haven't read it.
Oh no, yet. It's supposed to be a jumping on point. I can tell you because Marvel doubled the orders. I forget exactly how it worked out, they just doubled your order, which is what our store got. If you're a bigger store that orders, 100 copies or whatever, then you get some sort of percentage. But for a store like ours, we don't order, 5 dozen copies of Avengers every month. So our order, they just straight doubled and gave us as many as we ordered on top of that for free. So we would have extra copies because this is supposed to be a the start of the event, the jumping on point. This is where you're supposed to grab all those new readers.
Gotcha. Because from me skimming through it, I was like, yeah, there's not much in here that you didn't already have to be. You kind of had to already be there to see some of that. And even in the one case, I'm thinking Tim might have a question about. Even seems rather not odd, but soon, I guess. I don't know. There seems to be a time difference that's kind of off. I don't know what I can't really say, don't know what specifically he's has the question about, but yeah, they just basically took it from where it was like, hey, these people were progressing to this point, so we'll put them here. Whether it actually comes to pass, I guess that's the case.
I was about to say, there is no real jumping on point when it comes to a Hickman book.
Oh, that was another thing I was going to say. You were saying something about the boring parts, and it was like, sometimes it's the boring parts that's kind of, you have to, this is the ones to pay attention to, because that's the stuff that gets fed back into later to make the action parts, but that's, those are actually the good parts to me.
So, yeah. Anyone want to suggest a book, next?
Avengers World, I guess. I'm trying to think about what actually happened. This is basically the continuation of, hey, Madripoor is on the top of a dragon. We get introduced to the Asian version of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they enter the fight properly. And this is pretty much the story of... This is kind of going backwards into how they got, into their formation, which kind of seems a little bit familiar, actually. If you think about the way the Ultimate Avengers, were formed, kind of seems like it's to that point. But it was a decent reading at the end. I'm kind of looking forward to the next issue based on the end of the book.
I wish the art was better on this.
Yeah. It has its moments, but I don't want to say the cover is misleading, but it's a good cover. But it's not necessarily indicative of what, of anything that goes on.
Speaking of covers, I want to applaud Marvel on their cover work they have. Even though, of course, it's always a different cover artist than who's actually doing the inside art, but regardless, they have some awesome... Going through this list, you always see the cover, so I'm always paying attention.
You just reminded me. I think Mark Brooks has a book of his work coming out, and I totally forgot to pre-order it.
Who does?
Mark Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically the same books he's been selling at cons lately. But he was like, well, he said, if you couldn't make, specifically Comic-Con, if you couldn't make that, then, hey, pay $40 and get this or whatever. And I totally forgot to do it, because I love the stuff on the Fearless Avengers, Fearless Defenders, and other places.
Yeah. Deadpool. He doesn't get Deadpool covers. All right. Never mind. I was about to say, did anyone read Multiversity, but I'm pretty sure no.
Nope.
Trying to think of some DC books.
Anyone read? Well, did you read Multiversity?
No.
Oh.
I haven't even finished that first issue, and I probably won't.
Yeah, based on what y'all said about it the other time, it wasn't. I'm probably gonna read it at some point, but it's not one that's on. It's on the long list.
I'll probably sit down at some point this weekend and but I went back over the first one, and you know, there's just so much stuff that he tries to pack in there, and so many references to different things, and characters kind of tossed in the background that are, you know, just references to other stuff that's playing a role in whatever story. It gets to the point where you have to spend half the time on Wikipedia looking stuff up while you're sitting there reading the book in order to get everything that he's trying to say. And it's just tiring. It's like, it feels like you're doing homework.
Yeah, but you're doing homework to read the book.
Yeah, I don't want to have to do a research paper in order to understand what Grant Morrison is writing in a comic book. Just, you know, this is the easiest. It's parallel universes. You have an evil Superman show up. You have an evil Batman. Just, you know, have Dr. Fate in this world die and have Dr. Fate from another planet take his place. I mean, just, you know, there's so many just easy, you know, kind of comic book tropes that you can use, but just update them, you know, make them new, make them your own. But instead, it's every book is just, you need like a second issue to go with it that is just reference material, just pages and pages of text and diagrams. And that's just, it's too much. It's not fun. It's not entertaining. It's just work and bleh.
From what I understand, Grant Morrison is not the, like I said, not the easiest. I'm not sure, but he gets kind of weird, if I'm not mistaken. Would that be correct?
He definitely does. And sometimes it's fine. Like, sometimes I don't have a problem with it. Like, when he did Batman R.I.P., and, you know, Batman gets attacked, and he's psychologically broken down, and this other personality within him takes over, and he appears in this funky, he had that purple and yellow suit, and it was actually a character from a 70s comic that he kind of brought back and he incorporated it in, but it made sense in the context of the story that he had this like alternate persona embedded in his mind that should he ever have a mental breakdown, this other more primal personality would take over and just, you know, give him the instinct to survive. You know, that type of thing, you're referencing something that's old, but it doesn't matter if you don't know what that old reference is, but it's just there, you know, because, hey, it's kind of fun. Like, what is this kooky thing? Oh, look, that really existed in the 70s. How weird. But what he's doing in Multiversity is he's doing too much of this stuff where, like, in the first issue, there's the landlord knocking on the door trying to get the rent because this is part of the life cycle, the circle of life, the way beings interact, the way living organisms have to deal with one another, and that's, you know, playing into the theme of what's going to happen later when these beings from the other universe come through. And it's like, that is way too esoteric and way too, you know, you're pulling too far. If I'm supposed to be getting that type of reference, you know, from the opening panel of showing a hand knocking on the door to this great philosophy about life and death and how we have to interact with each other, then that's going too far. Like, it's time to pull it back a little bit, rein it back in, make it a little more enjoyable. So I do plan at some point at least sitting down and giving this the once through, but if it starts getting crazy and esoteric and stuff is happening out of nowhere and characters are appearing and you're supposed to know who they are even though you have no idea, I'm not going to Wikipedia and I'm not looking it up. I'm not going to IGN and reading the Cliff's Notes of the issue just so I understand what's happening. You know, if I can't get it on the first read-through, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to spend that much time on it.
Yeah, I tried all that prepping for the first issue.
It's just not worth it.
Yep. Comics should be fun.
Exactly.
All right, let's see. Something else to mention.
I did read the Future's End, New 52. And I am still enjoying the series. This cover is a little misleading, but something somewhat similar does happen on the inside. So take that with you when you go to read it. they, as the story is progressing, they are doing a much better job of fleshing out characters like Mr. Terrific and fleshing out some of the characters like Grifter, giving you more of a reason to understand why they're there and what their motivations are, what they're doing. They're pulling guys like Tim Drake back in. They're showing what's happening with certain characters like Superman and Batman, so you can, you know, understand what's going on in that part of the DC universe. So it has hit that stride now where it is a lot of fun. The one thing I will say is that in the Earth 2, I believe it was, Futures Then book from last week, there was kind of a spoiler, but since it's last week, I'll go ahead and say it on here. When you're reading this, there is a girl named 50 Sue who's like this little, I don't know, she's 8 or 10 or whatever, and she's got these just super massive powers and abilities. She can pretty much do anything that she thinks of, and it just happens. And they basically say that she is Darkseid's daughter. So if you remember, in the whole reason in the New 52, in Justice League 1, the whole reason the team came together in the first place was because Darkseid was attacking. And the reason why he was attacking was because he was searching for his daughter. And then in the Vibe miniseries, it was supposed to be an ongoing, but it became a miniseries, they showed that they had Darkseid's daughter locked up. I forget where it was. It was one of the government agencies. Had her locked up, and they were trying to keep it a secret from Darkseid, but you never saw her, and you never knew, you know, who she is or what, you know, she did or anything like that. But in the Earth 2 Futures End book, they basically, it's like a reference. It's like two characters just kind of having a conversation, and they just kind of throw out there the fact that that's Darkseid's daughter. So now you kind of understand who she is, you understand what's coming, you understand how these different threads of things happening in the New 52 are starting to tie together. So I think that really helps to make it a lot more interesting.
So when DC and Marvel does that crossover and Thanos' son meets Darkseid's daughter, we don't know why.
And then they'll fall in love.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess I totally forgot about the whole Darkseid's daughter.
Yeah, that was supposedly the whole reason why he attacked Earth 2 and he killed the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman of that world, and that's why he attacked our Earth in the beginning of Justice League there at the launch of the New 52. It was all trying to track down his daughter. So now here she is. So this is obviously leading to something.
Interesting. Okay. I was going to bring up Hulk number 6. So this is part 2 of Mega Hulk, where Hulk, a.k.a. Dot Green, after he's got improved brain capacity, I guess you could say, from Extremis, is going around and trying to rid the world of other gamma-radiated individuals. And he starts with his good friend, what's his name? His A-Bomb, but A-Bomb? I forget. Rick Jones. Yeah, Rick Jones. So, which he's successful, of course, because you got to start with somebody. And Mark Bagley still on art, and Jerry Duggan doing the writing. I like how witty, I like intelligent Hulk, you know. I never read any of the previous Hulks. So I missed, you know, back when he was intelligent or gray. So seeing him be able to form sentences and verbally spar with people. And there's another Hulk he's going after next issue. So that should be fun to watch. That's about it.
Okay.
Thor: God of Thunder number 25 is the finale of the run. A great run, I must say. Thor is another character I never read any of his single issues before. I guess before the Marvel Cinematic Universe exploded. But I've definitely enjoyed Jason Aaron's take on Thor this issue is I don't know if it's double size. It's a larger than normal issue, and it shows tales of from the past. It starts with Thor's three granddaughters going through like the library in Asgard, going and reading like the different tales that have been documented. You find out Malekith's origin, which I didn't know. You hear of a story of young Thor taking on frost giants in with his Vikings friends in the past, and I guess that sort of that. I guess I don't know if that was foreshadowing. I guess how Laffy comes back or whatnot, or something that's going to happen in the future. You had. What else? Yeah, Malekith's origin, young Thor, Viking Thor, and then it ends with the girl, like, one of the daughters is mad because she's tired of reading the stories of other people fighting, and she's not getting the fight, so she's getting impatient, and then all of a sudden they discover this secret book that's locked with chains. So if it's locked with chains, that must mean it's something juicy. So they break the chains to start reading it. And it's basically telling the story of the female Thor who we're going to be introduced to soon. And it kind of sees all this stuff that's coming up in the future, like the War of Realms, which I guess Malekith is going to cause some kind of war between the realms. And then you have, like, of course, you get the full-page splash of, you know, things to come in the future. And I want to say it looked like either Yondu or Guardian from Shi'ar with the Mohawk. And then, of course, you have, like, trolls and frost giants, I guess, and Loki with one of his horns broken on his little head plate thing. And, of course, Thor shows up and demands they close the book and get lost. And then it ends with him... It shows him on the moon still trying to lift the hammer. Oh, yeah, and the name of the book that they found was called, just the title of it on the front was Unworthy. So,
I was going to ask you, were there 13 ghosts in that book? But that's, you already answered that.
Yeah. Does Thor in this series have the robot arm that they showed him with in Avengers?
In Avengers?
Oh, you know, Avengers... They showed him 8 months in the future standing on the mountain with Cable's arm.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the Destroyer's arm he's wearing in the future?
Yeah.
Old Man Thor is wearing the Destroyer arm. So maybe I guess he gets tired of Cable arm and switches it for an updated model.
Was that what he's got on the cover of this book?
Yes, that's the Destroyer arm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Which he... Ever since he introduced Old Man Thor, or King Thor in the future, he's had that the Destroyer arm. So I guess he gets it or gets a different arm sooner coming up sooner than we thought. So Thor number one next month.
Yay!
Who's got something else?
What about Miles Morales' Ultimate Spider-Man?
I didn't get to it.
Oh, you're missing out.
I know. I'm mad.
I mean, it's once again, I will say this, it's well-written, and it's beautifully drawn, and so it's hitting all the right notes, you know?
I thought I felt a butt coming.
No, actually, what I was going to say was this is one of those issues where not a lot actually happens in this particular issue, but there are maybe two or three cliffhangers that are just kind of left dangling at the end of this book that should be answered in the next issue. So as far as this issue goes, it's nothing in this one technically happens, but this is all about building up for what's going to happen in the next book. Some of the big things are... Green Goblin escapes Osborn, and he goes to J. Jonah Jameson's apartment and he basically wants to bare his soul and tell Jameson his life story, and he reverts back to his human form and goes on the record and just starts having a big conversation with him. The two Spider-Men who have been going around robbing everything, wearing the powered-up suits, are basically breaking into the police super-powered evidence locker and stealing some other kind of technology, and they're apparently doing it for someone else. Dun, dun, dun. So we'll have to see where that plays out.
They don't show. They don't unmask them, do they?
They do. Okay. You see, but as far as I'm aware, they're nobody. They didn't strike me as anybody I'm supposed to know who they are. But it does show who they are, what their relationship is with each other, and how they're working for somebody else. The Maria Hill police detective in this world, the one who's been trying to get close to Miles for a while, finally sits him down, and he basically tells her his whole life story. And she's starting to put some of the pieces together that he seems to have missed from his history. So, but of course you don't know what any of that is in this issue because it's leading up to some sort of revelation in the next issue. So, like I said, there's nothing in this particular issue that it's like, oh my gosh, you have to have this one, but it does set up so much stuff for next month. At least three cliffhangers I can think of, and maybe a fourth one. I'm not sure if they'll actually explain it in the next issue or not, but all these things that they're setting up to explain. So it's if nothing else, it's going to get you anticipating the next issue that you have to wait a month for.
Nice.
Cool.
Uncanny. Not Uncanny. It's min number 32. So, since staying on the ultimate kick, so the original X-Men and X-23 are teleported to the ultimate universe, and they're all scattered around in different areas. You have Angel in the Savage Land, you have Iceman with Mole Man, I guess his name is, Beast in like Varia, Miles Morales, X-23 at a football game, I think. Yeah. I think that's everybody. So, the only scenes of consequence are Jean Grey and Miles interacting. So I guess it's kind of nice to see the Ultimate X-Men used again, since they don't have an ongoing series in the Ultimate Universe right now. People like myself have forgotten about them.
Although, again, it's making it look more and more like the Ultimate Universe is getting ready to implode, and characters like Miles Morales are going to make it to the regular Marvel Universe, and Ultimate is going to go away.
So basically, they just didn't do it when people thought they were going to do it. Is what you're saying?
Right.
They can do it on our timetable.
Yeah. which was going to be a question, which is already, I guess, is rhetorical at this point. But it was like, so that whole no crossover between 616 and Ultimate thing is pretty much dead at this point.
Yeah. Well, they basically said, was it Joe Quesada? I think basically said that the day that Peter Parker and Miles Morales meet, you'll know that we have no more creative energy left or something like that. And then, of course, they did a four-issue crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things where they didn't want those two universes touching because they were supposed to be reaching out to two different... And the success of the movies was reflected. That universe, the movie universe, cinematic, was much more reflective of what was going on in Ultimate than what was going on in 616. So they started morphing 616 to be more like the movies. So then Ultimate just kind of had to get weird and just go far out and just completely wild. And it just kind of... I think it just alienated a lot of people. So now... the Ultimate line has gone from being the cutting-edge book that all the, you know, younger teen readers want to read to now being the people who are reading it like me out of loyalty because they enjoyed seeing those characters, you know, for a stretch. And now it looks like they're just kind of peeling things away until they can get rid of the ultimate and just make the Marvel Universe the universe again, you know.
Which, right, you say that, and there was a Newsarama article just a few minutes ago saying basically it's link bait, but 14 ways that the movies changed the comics. So if you're inclined, go check it out.
Yeah, well, and of course, the easiest thing, the one that it all germinated from was the fact that in the Ultimate Universe, Nick Fury was drawn to look like Samuel Jackson.
Right.
So then, of course, when they did the movies and they made Samuel Jackson Nick Fury, then now suddenly they had to change the 616 Nick Fury to be a young black guy with an eye patch to look kind of like Samuel Jackson in the main Marvel Universe. So then, like, what makes the Ultimate Universe special now, you know? Yeah, it's like all the things that made it kind of different and special, like the X-Men, you know, splitting apart and one of them kind of going rogue and all of that that's happening with Cyclops and, you know, the Jean Grey school versus the Charles Xavier school, like that type of thing happened in the Ultimate Universe a couple years ago, you know?
Oh, it did?
All of that type of stuff is what's going on in the regular Marvel Universe.
We hadn't seen Nick Fury Jr. in a minute, unless he's in Secret or something. I'm not reading, but
yeah, he's in Secret Avengers. Yeah,
and he'll probably be in that Shield solo
Shield book
that
yeah.
I won't be reading.
I'll read it.
I don't care about Shield. And there,
so Shield is also your aim, is what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. I'd read Secret Avengers if I wanted to read about Shield-ish things. Wish the book. Luck, boo. The only book I read was Uncanny Avengers, and it kind of just, it's the March to Axis.
Yeah.
Havoc and Scarlet Witch and Rogue are captured by Red Skull's S-Men, and they run into Magneto, who was captured, or he went to Genosha in his solo book and got caught. And Havoc is disfigured from his fight with Kang in previous arc.
Right. And, yeah, Rogue and Scarlet Witch kind of come to an understanding and blah, blah, blah. It was a little bit of, like you said, it was just basically, hey, Axis is coming up, so here we go. It kind of had shades of slight, well, it almost started to have slight shades of Extinction Agenda, I guess that was the one. Where people got swept up to Genosha. But there's not so much. It was just like, hey, when it kind of dropped off, I was like, well, they just went from here to there real quick, and then it seemed like it. So I guess you got to read Magneto to see what he's doing on that one.
And even the Magneto one, it's like Magneto went from, like, his whatever story he was involved with ended, and then all of a sudden it jumped straight to him, like, finding out about the concentration camps in Genosha and going straight there. I'm like, whoa, when did all this happen?
Right. It's like, well, he got caught somewhere, so I'm wondering, I guess that's going to come out in his book or something.
Well, it was in last week's Magneto.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. But it's like, he was fighting his war against people hunting down mutants in his solo book, and then last week's book jumped straight to him investigating the stuff with the S-Men and Red Skull. It's like, how do you even find out about it?
You know, you hear things. He's got a network.
You hear things.
Word on the street is...
Yeah, you know. He's roughed up somebody who's talked, you know.
All right. Any other books?
Yeah, let me grab a couple here. Let me see here if I can get this moving correctly without freaking out on me. No, I cannot. It's going to freak out on me. All right.
It seems to be scrolling.
Yeah.
At least on our side.
Yeah.
It kind of is, but then it keeps kind of going out here. I'm going to escape from this for a second.
All right.
So Spider-Gwen came out this week. I didn't read it yet, but...
Oh, yeah. I did read that. How did I not put that on my list?
How was it?
Edge of Spider-Verse, number two, with Spider-Gwen, as people have been calling her. I liked it. Jason, I always kind of cringe when writers use kind of like slang terms, lingo, when writing teenagers. But it wasn't horrible. That's the only thing I'd like to deduct points from. But like Robbie Rodriguez's art and Rico, I forget the colorist, Rico something. He did the colors were great. And I just like the Spider-Woman's outfit. One. And basically they do the whole reversal of fortunes. So Peter is dead in this universe because he was getting picked on in school and he, I guess, took some serum and he becomes the Lizard in that universe. But then, of course, dies. So even though this is like a one-and-done issue, they still did like the, you know, previously in Spider-Woman and do like a recap.
Mm-hmm. And like, well, aren't all of these characters going to reappear in some big event thing? Like, isn't the whole point of... Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, they say in Amazing Spider-Man number 9, we'll see her again.
Yeah.
So. But okay. Yeah, Rico Renzi, I see from the cover, is the colorist.
Yeah, I'm happy to see Robbie Ride on something. On something else. He draws Federal Bureau of Physics, which.
Oh, for real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's him. So I'm happy to see him in doing this. So I'm looking forward to reading this.
Okay. I'm going to jump to a book that's a non-Marvel, non-DC. It's called Slaughter Lake. And this is from, what is it called, Mushface Comics. And this is a 99-cent Comixology release. And, Halloween is a little over a month away, and the weather has been getting cooler, so... the past couple weeks I've been getting kind of back into my horror movies. I was just watching Friday the 13th Part 3 the other day, and Sci-Fi has been showing Friday the 13th 1, 2, and 3 on TV, and Halloween got a big re-release last year that I'm going to sit down and watch again. But anyway, this is set in cheesy 80s slasher movie universe. And there's basically a place called Laughter Lake, which, of course, if you add an S in front of laughter, it becomes slaughter. And there's this guy named Mason who went insane, had a messed up face, had to wear a catcher's mask to cover up his horrendous face, has been in a mental institution, and escapes and goes back to the campground where he was conceived and born. And, of course, it just so happens there's a whole bunch of camp counselors in training who are there to make out and smoke weed and goof off just as this maniac is arriving. And it's funny because the book opens and the first page is a letter to the reader, an introduction written by Lloyd Kaufman from Troma, who did Toxic Avenger and Surf Nazis Must Die and all those type of direct-to-video movies.
So it's legit.
And, yeah, and he's just like, this is, you know, if you're a fan of any of that type of stuff, this is the type of book you need to read. And it is like, it's humor, it's funny, because it's obviously making fun of itself, it's making fun of the genre. You know, you've got a guy named Mason wearing a catcher's mask, you know, obviously it's tying into Friday the 13th and that kind of stuff, but it's Halloween because it's a mental institution, and the doctor is there trying to convince everybody that, this monster's coming. But, you know, at the same time, it is really gory. There's people getting shovels to the face that are splitting them in half. People getting their brains ripped out, heads getting squished and eyeballs popping out and all of that type of stuff that you'd expect in a slasher movie, a gorehead movie from the 80s. And it's well done. The artwork is kind of a stylized, cartoony type style where it's obviously, again, not taking itself too seriously. but it is nicely detailed. You know, there's nice textures. The layouts are nice. It actually looks professionally done. You know, considering it's from a company you've never heard of called Mush Face Comics, it's actually really, really good. And again, this is a 99-cent Comixology release, so it's a cheap thing that you can buy and throw in there. But, you know, I, like I said, I'm in the mood for this right now, and I've been watching, you know, the Friday the 13th and stuff. So seeing this and reading through this, it was the perfect thing to have as we're up in Halloween, and it's just a great... you know, on the one hand, it's a send-up and a spoof of the 80s horror movies, but at the same time, it's also like a celebration and an homage to those. So if you're any type of fan of those types of books, it's definitely worth checking out.
And clearly well-timed.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Wait, no burn victims with evil knife hands?
No, but maybe that'll come in the sequel.
Hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, are we ready to do some quick rundowns of stuff?
I've gone through all the books I've read, so...
And so have I.
All right. Then let's do
I do have a throwback one if you want one, though, that I haven't read yet.
A throwback one?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, so, as I said... Well, as I said earlier... Oh, Lord. What am I doing? Gotham starting up next week, so therefore Comixology has a sale on the whole Gotham Central line of books, and so I just grabbed them. I haven't read any of them yet, but I figured that's going to be this weekend.
How was it?
I just skimmed through the first issue, but I hadn't really, so I can't really. It seemed like it's going to be all right, but like I hadn't really deep delve, read into it. So,
okay. Yes, that'll be. I heard good things about that series.
I actually talked about it last week, so it was kind of fortunate that this happened.
They had a couple of writers on that, right? Like Greg Rucka, I think, was one of them.
Let's see. Rucka's writing it. Brubaker and Rucka. Ah. Brubaker and Rucka.
Tag team.
So you know what you're getting into.
So now we are ready for rapid reviews.
All right, let's run through some of these futures and books. So Wonder Woman and Superman Wonder Woman are a two-part story. So you start in Wonder Woman, and then it continues in Superman Wonder Woman. And what you find is Wonder Woman recently in her book has become the God of War. She's taken over the mantle. And she is basically fighting a battle in the, I forget what they call it, the Nether Realm or the After Realm or the Under Realm or whatever it is where all the dead people are going, but they're still fighting for the rest of eternity. Mm-hmm. And so she's in there fighting all these evil forces. And at the end... Superman appears, and so that leads into the Superman Wonder Woman, and basically Superman has come from basically the past to the future to go into this hell world to find Wonder Woman. He's the Superman from 4 years ago, so that would be a year from now. He's brought in because the Superman of Future's End is, you know, hiding in Africa in the desert, whatever, and so he leads her out of this realm, only to find that she's been hoodwinked the entire time. She was never actually in this area. Someone has been invading Amazon. Amazon. Whatever the island is. The island of the Amazons. Yes, there you go. And so she's been hoodwinked the entire time. She's been enchanted. So she thought she was fighting these evil monsters, but in fact she was fighting some of her own people and some of the defenders of the realm, whatever, being kept busy while this invading force was getting ready to hit the island. And so she has to reconcile the fact that she's the God of War and she's getting ready to fight this giant war battle, but she's war-worn. She's been fighting this battle as the God of War for so long that she's tired of it. She doesn't want to do it anymore. She thinks it's all futile. and so she has to come to some sort of character revelation. The story itself, it's the same thing we're seeing in a lot of these Futures End books. The story is actually a decent story. If you want to sit down and read Wonder Woman and Superman Wonder Woman together, it reads almost like a standalone graphic novel, prestige format book. It's a good story, but it doesn't tie into anything else that's going on. So if you're reading Futures End, this really has nothing to do with anything else that's going on in Futures End. I will say, though, that the Superman Wonder Woman book is actually drawn by Bart Sears, someone I haven't seen doing comics a lot recently, so it was good to see him back, and his artwork's always nice, so I was glad to have that there. We have the Batman and Robin Futures End, and this is Batman, of course, is beaten up. He's older. He's having a hard time keeping the battle going, and he's got a new Robin, and his new Robin is actually the character that you saw in Zero Year, the kid who was doing all the crossword puzzles all the time, trying to get smart enough to defeat the Riddler. He is actually the Robin in this future, and the guy who you see here on the cover, I can't think of what his name is. He's the guy who killed Damian. Yes, Heretic. He has reappeared. And so Batman's trying to figure out if this is the same guy who killed Damian, if this is another clone of Damian, if this is a clone of that guy, you know, what's going on. But he's afraid to bring the new Robin into this battle because, of course, he doesn't want to lose another Robin. And so you've got this whole situation where Alfred is trying to keep Robin busy and keep him away from this battle so he doesn't get involved because Batman's afraid of losing him. Again, doesn't really tie into anything else happening in Future's End, but it does fit with the story that's been going on in Batman and Robin, with the whole Robin Rises and the story with Heretic and everything. Like, it is a nice tie-in to that story. So it kind of feels like if they do an annual, then they do one of those kind of random 5 years in the future type annual, it fits along that track there, but not really anything that fits in Future's End. So it's a little disappointing as far as that goes. Let's see here. I made the mistake of reading the Trinity of Sin Pandora, which I understood very little of it because it's actually written as a continuation of the regular series. And I haven't been reading the regular series, so I was really lost on a lot of it, and it doesn't back up much of it. But basically, what you get out of it is she's been chasing after the incarnations of the seven deadly sins. And as it turns out, those sins are versions of her from alternate universes in the multiversity. So they are all, I guess, different aspects of her, different versions of her. Somehow when she opened the Mother Box skull and let Darkseid into the universe and opened the barriers between the multiple universes, she let the evil of herself from these other universes into our world, I guess. That's how I'm reading it. I don't know if that's right, but that's kind of what it seems like. But regardless, it was just... It didn't feel like it really meant anything, and it didn't tie into anything else, and it was hard to follow, so I consider that one a failure. Which, I guess compared to a lot of the other ones. The Justice League, this was the continuation of what happened in the Justice League United Futures End. You've got Captain Atom on the moon who's been being held as a prisoner by John Johns. He's letting all the other bad guys out so that he can distract the Justice League so he can escape. And in the end, they basically just trick him into thinking that he's back on Earth before he turned into Captain Atom and he's living a nice life, and that makes him fall asleep, and that's the end. So really a very anticlimactic story. Just felt completely pointless at the end. Really, really disappointed. Considering that's supposed to be like the flagship, book, Justice League, that's what kicked off the whole New 52, and it's one of the weakest ones of this whole deal. All right, I got two more here. that I read, and then we'll wrap up this quick recap here of these Futures Ends. Batman Superman. This is basically the story of what happens after the fallout between Superman and Batman. Batman is...
I was going to guess...
I'm sorry, what's that?
I was going to guess, I wonder if they fell out regarding the breakup between Superman and Wonder Woman.
Well, no, it's actually... Something happens in the war with Earth 2, and Batman... It doesn't exactly say what happens, but Batman somehow tricks Superman into doing something he doesn't want to do, which ends up helping the war, but it kills a bunch of people. And it's one of those things where Batman said, well, this is necessary, it had to be done, and Superman is, you used me, how dare you, blah, 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 and Superman abandons humanity, basically, you know. So Batman on his own is forced to get some technology to fight off Metallo, who's supposed to be, you know, a Superman villain. He needs Clark to be there to take this guy on, but of course he's not. So he has to figure out some way to do it without him. And the whole time he's narrating a letter that he's writing to Superman, kind of asking, where are you? I know things haven't been right. We have to work this out. The world still needs you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end, he defeats Metallo on his own. Superman doesn't come to his aid, so he just decides, well, if Superman feels he's too good for this world, then fine. The world doesn't need more. And he ends up taking the letter that he wrote to Superman and throwing it into the fire, and he's getting ready to rebuild himself as the hero that this world needs. So I'm hoping... that this is actually foreshadowing his return in Future's End, that we're going to see this triumphant Bruce Wayne return somehow in Future's End. Although reading the latest issue of Future's End, I'm not sure how it's going to work out, but nonetheless, that's what it appears is happening. And then the last one I read was Supergirl. And, okay, so this ties into her series. It does tie into some of the things that have happened in her book. It brings her back in touch with Cyborg Superman, who is her father, remade as a Herald of Brainiac. It works on all of that story. The problem is that none of it happens on Earth until like the very end, and it really has nothing to do with what's going on in the rest of Future's End because of the way it's divorced everything else is happening in Future's End. So you can kind of tell it's set in the same world, but it doesn't interact. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. She's been in outer space, so she hasn't been any part of what's been going on in Future's End. So I don't know if this is supposed to mark her return to the DC Universe. So she will appear now in Future's End. But they base this whole story around all these other characters that she's met in the time between where she's at now and 5 years in the future. So it's all characters you don't know. It's all people that you don't care about. It's some long-lost love of hers from a couple years ago, which would be a couple years in the future for us. So it's someone we have no connection with and no attachment to. So it kind of, you know, fails on that end where it's bringing in these characters that we don't know anything about but we're supposed to care about. And so it doesn't really work as far as that goes. It fits the theme of what's been happening in her regular series, but, I mean, as far as the actual characters are having any sort of emotional attachment, it just doesn't work. So there you go. That's what I read for Futures End this week, and, again, some good stories. The Batman-Superman is a really good read. The Wonder Woman and Superman-Wonder Woman are a good read. The Batman and Robin is a good read. The rest of it, you can just pretty much never worry about it ever again.
Cool. Those holograms play really well at Steels, except for not.
Did you say you're a click of the week?
Who, me or Dirt?
Dirt.
No, I have not.
Okay. I'll give mine first. I'm going with Avengers 35.
Okay. You know, I might have to co-sign that one.
Okay.
You know, because I pretty much just skimmed that one, and I've actually read the other two, and the other two were really, they were all right, but, so.
I want to pick New Avengers from last week, but I don't think I'm allowed to do that.
I'll allow it. You know, I don't know if this weighs anything, but.
Hey, you know what? Looking at what I read this week and what resonated with me, I am going to do my click of the week as, if I can get back to it. Come on, go back. There you go. Slaughter Lake. Slaughter Lake. That's going to be my pick for this week because I really did enjoy it. You know, when I'm thinking about books like Multiversity and everything out there that is trying so hard and seems to be failing, all these Futures End books I was looking forward to and none of them are really panning out. As well as I hoped, getting a book like this that comes out of nowhere and is just so much fun, and just hits all the right notes, and it's making fun of what it's doing, but being respectful of it at the same time. I just got to go with it. So that's my pick.
Nice.
Yes. All right. That should wrap up tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. I want to thank those watching live or on the audio or video replay. Make sure to follow us on our Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yes, indeed.
Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And Agent 70, who is not here tonight, he is at Agent_70. Oh, and he's sent his email what his click of the week is, but just remembered, pulled that up.
Is it Avengers?
Yeah, it's Avengers 35, because it's so full of Hickman mumbo jumbo e goodness. Boom.
All right.
Another thing. So, we'll be back live next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off. Oh, yeah, so.
Ta-da.
Applause. You got the applause and stuff.
There it is.
This is the Infinity 2.0 next week.
What was that?
Gotham and
Infinity 2.0.
Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
Hey.
What's on your evil mind? Oh.